Watching the Super Bowl this year, it was interesting. My business partner for years was Warren Moon. I represented him when I ran Lee Steinberg, the most notable sports agency at its time. And it was interesting because the two teams that made the Super Bowl weren't expected to be in the Super Bowl. But to me, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner myself, as a business and executive coach, it represented culture. Those two organizations have built over decades an extraordinary culture that preceded and postceded their coaches. Two of the best coaches of all time had taken them to the Super Bowl previously, obviously Belichick and Coach Carroll, who I'm sure you admire in some way or another, their ability to build culture. When I look in the college arena, there's one coach that comes to mind of building culture, and all the teams that you have led as an assistant and then as a head coach, culture seems to be a priority. And today, people don't work for companies anymore. And I know in this industry, because I'm a participant in the industry as an investor, and I fly charter when I need to, or other people pay for it. It's really nice. People work for culture today, not for companies. What were some of the secrets that you've learned as one of the greatest culture builders in our country?
Well, David, and I can't wait for everybody to start to hear your story. Quite honestly, I didn't know much of it. I grabbed a book, by the way, that I can't wait to read. Culture is, it became my primary focus. The older I, more mature I got in coaching, to be quite honest with you, that, I grew up in the Lou Holtz hired me at Notre Dame at a young age. I worked for Woody Hayes, and Woody, I didn't work for him. He was still alive when I was at Ohio State in 87, 86 and 87. He passed away in 87. Earl Bruce became like my second father. Bo Schembechler became a mentor of mine, and I'm humbled to say that. I mean, that's my guy. Those are my peoples. You throw a Tom Osborne and a Bobby Bowden in there and Joe Paterno, though, that's the era that I grew up in. But to say that I had a complete grasp of what culture meant, and now that I do a lot of, I get invited to maybe 50 teams a year to go talk and listen. They want me to kind of evaluate their culture and visit with them, and I'll come in and I it's like a young me is like, I'll say, okay, let's tell me about the culture of this place. And well, culture is really important, coach. I know that. And I said, but what is your culture? Tell me what it is. And but culture is really important. I said, no, we cleared that up a minute ago. What is it when I walk in this? And I had Jamie Dimon come speak to the Buckeyes every year. I used to was very intentional about who I ever had speak, because we were very intentional about our culture. And you can have some speaker come in and blow it apart. You can have some former great athlete come in and everything you've been working on blow it completely apart. So here's my definition of culture and how it became so important. And I was talking to the people at Goodwin, which I'm on the board and I love this company, is that, the culture that is set by Tolga and Ben and Ilya is very obvious to me, when I'm here, but it's not as fluid. The world I was in, I was going through 30 to 40 players a year, sometimes 20. Usually a handful of coaches would leave. So it was a flywheel of people coming in and out of the organization. And I learned this also from Bill Belichick. He also dealt with that. Not, the pros, you don't lose as many players as you do in college, because college is a flywheel, it's a circular business. So it was very important to not only have a culture, but have it so crystal clear. I would tell people it's going to be so clear that if you're welcomed in this organization as a player or as a coach, that you're going to have to push it away if you don't believe in it. That's how thick it's going to be. And we work so hard on it. And here's what I'll never forget, Jamie Dimon. I'm paraphrasing just a bit. I kind of used it in my own words, but when I walk into a place or you walk into a place, you can see it, you can feel it, and you can hear it. That's the culture, regardless of what you say. And I've been on several corporate boards, and I do a lot of speaking and all that, and I'll ask the same question. Well, what's your culture here? And you'll hear things like, well, our mission statement, I didn't ask that. What's your culture? Culture drives the behavior of your employees or of your people. It drives it. And if there's lack of clarity, then what's driving it? Personal ambition is what's driving it. Personal ambition is very strong, very good, but at times it goes against the culture if there's not clarity of that culture. So I hope I'm making sense. I know it's around, but I think it's the most overused word, certainly in college athletics, because I do know that. But the more familiarity I get with corporate America, I think the word culture, people don't really understand it. And I'm talking about some powerful people. They just, because I'd ask that same question, what is it? And they start, what is it? But then I look back on my career until I got with a guy named Tim Kite, and we wrote the book Above the Line, and he passed away, unfortunately, but he was my leadership consultant early on in my career at Ohio State. And I mean, it's exploded. And I used cult, and I'm going to go through what it was quick in a minute, but in the hiring practices, I was so crystal clear with every person that ever came into that facility, not as a guest, but if you're going to join our program as a player or as a coach, I beat it to death because I didn't want to just waste so much time if you're constantly with the flow of people, the fluidity of the profession I was in, that it just wastes time if you don't know that beforehand. Plus, some people might not really believe in that. And I see the reason I bring that up, that's probably the number one critique I have of other, when I go visit friends that are in the coaching profession, or I go visit corporate America and spend a day or two with a company and I'll walk away. That's what I see number one. All good people. If you have bad people, that's a whole different animal. But the lack of clarity of I'm not going to say mission culture statement because I disagree with that completely. If the culture, mission statement to me is a statement that doesn't drive behavior. I think it's kind of cool to put a mission statement on a wall and let people read it. Well, it's pretty good, community service or whatever. That's fine. I'm not saying it's bad. It's great. Right. But that's not driving behavior. Culture is what drives the behavior. And after the Jamie Dimon conversations, after Bill Belichick, I went and visited their, after they won back-to-back Super Bowls in 04 and 05, I believe it was, and I went and visited them, and I became very close with Coach Belichick, and the Patriot Way was so crystal clear that the players lived it, breathed it. You could see it. You could certainly feel it, and you could hear it when you're just walking through the facility. So our culture at Ohio State, and it took a lot of time, because you want to something that people can spit back at you and know what it is. And our number one part of our culture, we wanted to be the hardest playing team that ever played a game. I know that's, but when you're sitting in 37F and you see the Scarlet and Gray run out, I want you to leave, go, whoa. I mean, they might not be perfect, but man, do they play fast, they play hard, they play violent, they play. And I've heard that about our teams. The second thing is we embrace hard work. It's called competitive excellence. And that's a flat plagiarism from John Wooden, the great basketball coach at UCLA. He called it competitive greatness in the triangle. I call it competitive excellence. So what that means is when your number is called, you're ready to make a play. It's not because of the rabbit's foot in your pocket or the lucky T-shirt, or it's because you worked for that moment. And I always get very defensive when I hear non-sports people say, well, that was lucky. That was not lucky. Those players have done that. I used the word 10,000 times. You worked with Warren Moon. He wasn't a gifted quarterback because he was gifted. He worked at it. So number one, again, is relentless effort, or we're going to be the hardest playing team that the fan has ever seen. I know that's a big, but I'd like to think that we're close to that. The second thing is competitive excellence. So what is that? We're going to embrace the grind and the hard work that goes with being great. And if you complain about that, this isn't for you. It's going to be really, at times, miserable. But we're going to go, we're here to win rings and lift trophies. If that doesn't fit your job description, there's probably 130 other places out there you can go. It's just not that important, which is fine. Save us all a lot of effort here. But for the Joey Boses of the world who embrace that, let's go. JT Barrett's, et cetera. And then the last one is the brotherhood, and that we want you to love each other. We want you to really sincerely care. You don't have to be friends, but we want you to care for each other. We want you because, it's a militaristic model, which I'm a huge fan of the men and women who serve our country. It's the greatest form of selflessness that exists on this planet. My father's Army, sister's Air Force, and I can't get enough of it. But what makes a soldier fight? It's not for our country anymore. It's not for the Army. It's not for the Navy. It's not for the Air Force. It's for each other. So those are the three parts of our culture. And you better be able to see it. You better be able to hear it. And you better be able to touch it when you came in. And that's a challenge I have when I do speaking things like this. Don't tell me culture is important, because I think you're a knucklehead if you say, well, who cares? Everybody's going to say it's important. then the next question is kind of a complicated one. What is it? And I learned that from some great mentors in my journey.
Yeah, we've been blessed to be around a frequency, and the culture creates a frequency. You can feel it, see it, hear it, believe it. And in that common denominator with the billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, and entertainers that we've been blessed to be around our entire career, there's a common denominator, which you touched upon, which is a desire that you must be what you can be. Bosa, for example, is one of those people that exemplifies that desire. No matter what he's doing, he has a desire. But there's, in the corporate world, a difficult situation, even beyond sports, of talent versus this behavior. And as a below average college football player that dreamed about playing at Ohio State, but for some reason they were smart enough not to let me play there.
I didn't recruit you.
No, you were smart. That's why you won championships. But beyond that, you know, Mike Tannenbaum's a really good friend of mine, and we would evaluate talent and behavior. And with quarterbacks, you would look at them and say, okay, their skills and their knowledge are their basement, but how do you determine this delta, this desire? Because like you said, Warren Moon's not the greatest skilled quarterback. He wasn't born with Ryan Leaf capability. But his delta, especially because he had to go to Canada and understand how struggle creates strength. Right. And he'll be the first one to admit that if he would have been drafted first, he would not be in the Hall of Fame. It was what happened because they made him play in Canada for 6 years that created one of the greatest quarterbacks that hopefully you and I would agree has ever played the game. When you're evaluating talent and behavior, knowing that the talent is the basement, so no matter how much desire I have, I'll never be as good as Ryan Leaf. But yet in the corporate world, it's hard to distinguish the delta. And so looking at capability, talent, and then balancing it or harmonizing it with this idea of behavior.
I don't know if you guys are taking notes or not, but I'm not being arrogant. This is wheelhouse stuff for me. This is something I spent my career doing. And I think we were by the time I was at Ohio State near the end of Florida, I was really good at this. And this I learned from primarily Bill Belichick. So we're going to talk, we're going to take a minute here. This is really strong though. This is really strong content. You got talent acquisition. And well, I always tell people when a guy gets a job, I'll get a phone call. Say, I just got hired. I'm a head coach of so-and-so. And you're sitting in that chair and you're like, holy hell, what do I do now? And that's real. I mean, you become a CEO of a company. You run a company. Okay, great. Oh, what do I do? Because you're getting, they're coming from everywhere. Go do this. Go do this. And the reality is there's two things that matter if you're going to be successful or not when you get that leadership position. Number one is develop and implement a culture. Number two is talent acquisition. Other than that, how's your golf handicap? Doesn't matter. You know, how many speaking events you're going to do. That, and I hear these, you know, what's your coach's contract? You know, and be honest, that doesn't matter if you don't have those two things. If you don't develop and implement a culture. We just talked about that briefly. I know it's much deeper than that. But the talent acquisition piece, talent acquisition, talent development, and talent retention is something I actually spent a good time with Goodwin, Ilya, and had a great conversation just under a year ago about, you know, not just acquiring talent, but then how do you develop them once you have them, and then how do you keep them?
Right.
And everyone's not the same. So I'm going to go through each one of these briefly. This came exactly, again, from Bill Belichick in 2004-05. I get hired at Florida after our undefeated season at Utah, and I get a phone call and says, hi, this is Bill Belichick. And I'm screwing around. I see, yeah, this is Pete Rose, too. I started joking around. I thought it was one of my boys calling me. I said, he goes, no, it's really Bill Belichick. I'm like, holy shit, Bill Belichick. Can I come down and watch your offense where you want to study the spread offense? Boom. He comes down and he spends at least 6-7 hours himself working out every draft eligible player. Players that I'm looking at him going, they have no chance. What are you doing? But he doesn't trust anybody because talent acquisition is that. And you think of those teams he had, they always drafted late in the draft. And they draft these kids that you're like, who? But he did the homework. Talent acquisition was very important. The culture we just talked about,
yeah.
Talent acquisition. And I studied, I'm like watching him do this. And it was called the Patriot Way back then. And he had a very succinct model that he would look for. And if you didn't fit that model, he quit looking at 40 times, length of arms, you know, all the stuff you see. You get the drafts coming up, you're going to hear some stuff that I watched it some time ago. What are you talking about? That has no business on what is happening here, but it's just fans and unfortunately some people behind a microphone too talking. And I'm going, you have really no idea what you just came out of your mouth. So talent acquisition, here's what he did. He came up, he had five qualities. I somewhat plagiarized it, but I used my own. And so you have to have a very clear standard that you are going to go get when you go, and I used it for coaches, any staff, and most importantly, the players. Our five qualities that you had to fit the bill or we're not going to touch you. Number one is competitive spirit. What's the greatest common denominator of every great, you know, I see a fighter pilot, Joe in the back, of every great fighter pilot, every great teacher, every great mother and father, every great businessman, every great broker, every great coach or player, I know what it is. It's a competitor. It's the distaste of losing that makes, that drives you. And I want to be around. I joke around with people that, I think I said earlier, is if you're not like that, I really don't have much in common with you. What are we going to talk about? You know, Iran or something? I guess we are. But if you're one of those people that winning is that important to you, let's talk, because I want to hear how you're doing this. And so number one quality that we would look for is competitive spirit. And it's very measurable. I'm not a big fan of immeasurable qualities. Number two is toughness, mental and physical toughness. It's a tough world out there. The world I was in, it was really tough. I mean, obviously physically tough. You're asking guys to run down a kickoff and hit things at 18 miles an hour. But, you know, corporate America. But I still believe, and after being around it now the last 4 or 5 years, you got to be a tough person. You know, mentally and physically tough. You got to be tough. You got to have mental toughness and fight through arguments, conversations, your beliefs. Number three is leadership. And leaders, I always add this, can you lead yourself first? And that's very obvious to watch. Can you lead yourself with just personal discipline, personal responsibility, personal respect? Can you lead yourself? And then can you lead others? As you lead others, as I would tell our players and coaches, that's when you usually add a zero to the back of your salary, because everyone's looking for that person that can elevate others. So again, number one is what? Competitive spirit. Number two, mental and physical toughness. Number three, can you lead self and lead others? Number four, are you intelligent? I don't care what your ACT score is, but can you, I've been around a lot of 36 ACT people that can't figure out how to get through that door back there. But are you an intelligent person that can handle the dynamics of whatever profession you're in? And then finally, probably as important as ever been, is the adaptability. You know, can you, in the football world, when your starting quarterback gets hurt, can you win? What happens if two starting quarterbacks get hurt? You know, things are going to happen, and can you adapt? So that's talent acquisition. I was on a board, a very big company, and then I became just a coach for the CEO, but they asked me to sit in. This was a 7-figure position they were getting ready to hire. And they asked me to be involved in the hiring, or just not hiring, because I don't, there's a retail thing and I can't even spell retail, but I know enough about people. And so they asked me to sit in and I asked questions. I said, so what are we looking here for now? You know, everybody's talking. They had an HR person there and the HR person became one of my great friends. And not at this time, it was a little bit like, you know, I kind of pushed back a little bit. But I said, what are we looking for? And it got quiet, crickets. So, you know, and I kind of went into the Bill Belichick and what, how we learned, you know, the five qualities we're looking for. And I was expecting someone to say that, this is what we're looking for. And then the HR person finally says, well, I think cooperation is really important. And I write it down. So good, cooperation, at least we're going somewhere now. Okay, what else are you looking for? Humility. And I'm thinking, where's this conversation going here? We're trying to hire a 7-figure CEO that's going to run a big company here. And that's why I said, you know, when I, you know, one of my great colleagues and guy I used to coach against all the time, Nick Saban, those aren't two of the qualities I think of when I think of him. Yeah. You know, some of the best people I've been around, and, you know, I kind of looking for an ass-kicking machine that's going to walk in and take control of the moment, take control of the room, it can take control of the company. So we just pushed back on that, but it was a really good learning experience for me and the people that when we hired this next person that they hired to really be aligned on the criteria you're looking for and not just spitballing. Do you know what I'm saying? And I learned, I didn't know that early in my career. That was Bill Belichick. To say I knew that, I made a lot of mistakes in recruiting, some mistakes in hiring, because I hired them if they were smart. I recruited them if they ran fast. And the recruiter said he was a five-star. I recruited that person. That wasn't right. But most people do that. Until I finally learned from one of the greatest of all time, Coach Belichick. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, I know this is long. We're going to go right to talent development. And this is really interesting. So as a leader, there's a couple common things that you're always going to deal with. Number one, that everybody in this room is going to deal with if you're in a leadership position. Someone in your team is not performing well. There's only two strategies that you can use. Number one is called elimination. You can fire them. I wasn't a big fan of that. I only fired one person in 20 years. I mean, flat fire them. I maybe made some mistakes, but I just believe in loyalty. And I made it so uncomfortable people would leave. But just to flat fire someone, I brought that person there. That was really hard. Nowadays, a lot of people just get rid of it. I don't agree with that. Because I worked in an environment like that, and I hated it. I went to work. I remember driving to work, wondering if I'm going to get fired. That was terrible. And then everybody starts covering each other's, with their ass. I didn't want to create that. I wanted to create a very competitive, high standard, but not fearful. So the number one, I don't want to lose everybody. So what's the number one? I'm going to start asking a question to make sure you got it awake here. So number one issue that you will deal with as a leader is what? Not paying attention, are you? Too many Wolverines in here. The person is not performing well.
Yeah.
Okay, that will happen. Multitude times a day, probably. Some have, what's wrong with this? What their sales are off? In my world, they're getting weak, they're losing weight, they're not. So the number one, the easiest way to handle is you fire the person. I don't believe in that. That's your business. The other strategy is called development. And here's what I come up with in 30, almost 40 years in the profession developing, staff and players and all that. If that individual is not performing, I think it falls into one of three categories, and it's your job, a leader, to address and fix. Number one is that person does not trust you, does not trust his direct report, or God forbid, he doesn't trust the people he works with. Can you fix it? You can, but you have to dive into it, and sometimes it gets a little messy. But trust, an organization without trust, I love playing those teams. I could tell pretty quickly. We would beat the mess out of them, because when it got hard, it didn't work very well for him. So number one issue with a player or a person not performing is trust. Number two is the person's skill set is not developed or not utilized. And the book Good to Great is one of the great examples. Get them in the right seats on the bus. And I see them in, I'm not a business person, but I understand people. They got someone that's great in sales, but they got them to do a numbers job. And they think it's that person's fault. No, it's your fault. You're the leader. Either give them the skill set to develop that skill set. And the perfect example, I'd yell at my coaches all the time. I'd say, the kid can't play man coverage. Well, he's 5'9", covering a guy 6'4". And it's the kid's fault now. You're a 55-year-old man that I'm paying a lot of money for. Let's figure this out. He doesn't have the skill set to doing what you're asked to do. So quit blaming the player. And the coach would be like, oh, shit, he's right. So his skill set is not developed or not utilized. And then finally, and this is so powerful, the person's in conflict. Something's going on. And you got to dig. Sometimes those are the tears. I've had coaches on my staff that had addiction problems, marital problems. I've seen, players all of a sudden, what's wrong with that player? I found his mom has cancer. Well, God forbid, And you find out, and then the humanistic side of you, let's go fix this together. So once again, it's trust, skill set, or conflict. Once you fix those, think of the environment you created in your workplace. If you fix, which I believe everybody can be fixed. I won't give names, but I had a player that was alcoholic. I didn't know that. And I'm not sure he was when I hired him, but it got real bad. And he wasn't performing well. Once I found out what was going on, and what I found out is there's things in his past that were coming to haunt him. So we got him help. To this day, he's one of my closest friends. Because it was easy for me to say, hey, you're out. I don't agree with that. Once again, I'm not going to step on toes. If that's your strategy, that's what you do. But be careful of the work environment you're going to create. So that's development. And then finally, retention. And this is where I spent a long time with Ilya about really, really important. And I really didn't have a way of doing it. And I think this is absolutely paramount to keeping good people. Everybody, like I was one of the first coaches in college football that when you go to a bowl game, they give you a 15% raise. I think it was 15%. And I was like, why is that person getting the same raise as that person? That person's much better than that person. I need that person. And then finally I started fighting back, you know, when I got to the point where I kind of controlled it, when I got hired at Ohio State, I met with Gene Smith. And I said, okay, here's the way we're going to do our salary structure. I have 1 through 5. 5 is a diamond. 5's elite. 3's average. 1's, we won't have 1s or 2s because they won't make it here. I won't hire those people or bring them in. But a 3 is going to get paid like a 3, and he's going to know it, or he or she's going to know it. And then a 5, we're not losing the 5. And I looked at the AD and I said, now this is going to get really expensive if I get a bunch of 5s. But the good news is we'll probably get trophies and all kinds of really cool stuff going on and 110,000 people in that stadium. And he understood it. He said, you're the first coach that's ever done that, where it was all objective, not subjective. And the entire organization understood that. Think about that. How I never had that growing up in my career. No one ever said, you're 5 or 4. Here's what you need to become a 5. And I also made it clear to our staff, 5s aren't going to leave here. I'm going to pay the hell out of you. And I really appreciate you. And here's, you're the 3. Let's come in here and meet. Here's the 5 things you need to become a 5. Now it's on you. And it's up to that person. What that gives is crystal clear. Avoids all the ambiguity that goes with sometimes those meetings, uncomfortable meetings you have to have. And I found that to be one of the strongest things we ever did in leadership.
It's interesting because as you go through acquisition, development, and retention, 3 of the most critical things about building and scaling a business, it really stems in the acquisition part. You know, as running multi-billion-dollar businesses myself, I would blame other people the same as the coaches that would come to you for the 5'9 kid that couldn't cover the 6'4 kid, and realize I was hiring people without distinguishing the development and retention capability before I hired them. So I would now categorize as advice to entrepreneurs, when you're interviewing someone through your culture, so for me, it's gratitude, empathy, accountability, and inspiration, the desire. Gratitude. So I want someone that finds the light, the love, and the lessons, no matter what circumstances arise. Because time, value, and emotion automatically changes the instant you hire someone. And so we have to take that into account in the adaptability factor. 2 would be forgiveness, often overlooked. That when you're building a culture, forgiveness is one of the most crucial things in forgiving ourselves. Because those that can't forgive themselves are just going to go to blame, shame, and justification and destroy the culture or the frequency of your corporation. The 3rd was accountability in a different form. So everything is about learning and developing to retain someone. Because if someone's learning, they're most likely to stay with you. They're learning how to deal with their addictions. They're learning how to deal with other people. They're learning how to find their higher self, their best self. And they feel, regardless of what they're paid, they feel fulfilled in that culture. And so they're going to stay, but also not just stay, but empower other people in the culture in the same direction. So in accountability, when I was hiring, I would look to say, okay, take a situation. What did you do to be responsible? See how they reacted. What did you do? I'm a little bit spiritual. What did you do to attract this to yourself? So I'm the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute. The laws of attraction are probably the precipice for the movie The Secret. And everyone from Zig Ziglar to Bob Proctor to Wayne Dyer all resolve on this idea of attraction. But what did you do to attract this and see the reaction? And then finally, the most interesting one, especially as the ego has evolved. So the ego was built to protect your body. So a saber-toothed tiger would cruise by your cave. The ego was built originally for the human existence to say, shit, I got to make sure I stay alive. And then it evolved as we evolved to protect the mind, right? Our thoughts. So you hurt my feelings, right? I have a need to be offended and need to be right, which destroys a culture. And then finally, how are you participating in this perception? You've described to me this incident, this circumstance, how you are responsible, how you have attracted it, but how are you participating in the perception? And then I'd ask, so what'd you learn from it? And through gratitude, the ability to find the light, the love, and the lessons, forgiveness for all the mistakes you want these guys to make, because that's how we learn, and then being accountable for it, taking accountability or control of our lives outside of these circumstances, then it actually statistically helps you with the adaptability and also helps with inspiration. Because
so is this talent acquisition or is this culture or yes?
It both. So I'm looking for people aligned with the culture by acquiring people. Then I look at capability as you do. But the distinguishment that I wasn't looking at, I would look for the cultural fit and forget to analyze, is this capability teachable or not? So in the corporate setting, a lot of times we find these people with a great bio, a great CV, a great interview. They're aligned with your culture. And we forget to say, are your capabilities, are your skills, your knowledge, and your desire aligned with what we need to be done? And if not, that's cool because I'm there to develop you. But a lot of times, like for example, you might love me as a coach. Right, all these records in San Diego high school history, so fast. But I weighed 147 pounds, and you could not teach me to be good enough to play at Ohio State. But a lot of times in business, you hire people like me because I have all of these great attributes, culturally, great leader, self-leader, leader of others. But in the end, you can't develop me. And so people cheat themselves with the idea of firing fast. I do a lot of work with Gary Vaynerchuk, and we argue all the time. He's like, hire slow, fire fast. I said, no, hire slow and never fire. You can manage people out if you're wrong, but never fire. You should be good enough at acquiring the talent to align with where you want to be or better, and circumstances will change. But if you're not looking at capabilities that are teachable beforehand, then you're making as big a mistake as Urban would have made to recruit me to play at Ohio State.
So that's powerful stuff. Is that in here?
Yeah. I got seven other of them.
Awesome. So here, I want to add to your, this is profound stuff, by the way.
Well, I learned from Bill Belichick as well.
So I went to see him, and after the Pete Rose comment, I go see him. And that was the first year married. He spent 6-7 hours. By the year three, he only spent an hour and a half. Why? Because I did the filtering. I knew what he was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And they're my players. And he's the only coach I had that relationship with. He'd come in, he'd say, I'm coming, called it the pilgrimage. I'm making the pilgrimage now. Coach, I said, good. I have a set, we'll have dinner here tonight. And if Billy Donovan was basketball coach, he was good friends with Billy, go to the game. And then I'd sit down with him and I'd have the players waiting outside that were Patriot players.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the only coach I did that with because I already knew what his qualities were. And for example, when I
and
say-
And he trusted you.
He trusted me because of our relationship.
Correct.
Plus, I believed in it.
Yeah.
And so when I, let's go back to the, and this is the pushback where, how do you measure? Like the measurables in my world, here's how Bill, and this is beautiful. He'd come in and he'd watch, say Zeke Elliott. He'd come in and watch Zeke Elliott and he'd say, and I knew after a minute what he was doing, say, I want to see the robbery game. I want to see all third downs, all four downs. I want to see the championship game. I don't want to see when he's playing against some bad team. I want to see, because true competitors do what? They give us your best when we need you the most.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted. So he only wanted to watch a subset of what he was looking at because he wanted, how about the toughness piece? Give me the trainer report. And once again, I know this doesn't really matter to brokers, but I'm giving you just examples. Of how you measure these qualities as opposed to ask the question, are you tough? Yeah, I'm tough. Okay, you check that. No. That's not what you do. And then how about the adaptability piece? You know, there's different ways to measure them. So when you have your
great question,
your forgiveness, your mm-hmm. gratitude was first.
Gratitude, then forgiveness, then accountability, and then this desire.
Okay, inspiration. I want a job.
Yeah. So there's two quantitative variables that people don't actually realize, and they're man-made constructs that are really dependent variables in business. One is time, and one is how much of that time are you spending aligned with the business objective or interfering with it? And you can use this in a matter of energy as well. I have a lot of professional athletes that they shadow me for a day. So I have them meet me at 4 a.m., to learn what I do till 5 p.m. Outside of that, not allowed to shadow me. By 3 o'clock, these are some of the great, Dwayne Wade is one of them, one of the greatest and really fit people. They're still playing, a lot of them. By 3 p.m., they're exhausted. And they'll say to me, you know, Mr. Meltzer, you're not younger than me, faster, stronger, better cardio shape than I am. How is it you're still so fired up at 3 p.m. and I'm exhausted? I said, because I listened to you all day interfere with the infinite amount of energy that we all are a part of. And it's the amount of time you're spending in the day in attention and intention of the coincidences you desire, the coinciding of what you desire. So I'm examining what you're doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing. And is it aligned with where we want to be or better? What's doing well today at the business, what's stable at the business, and what I think is going to be doing well at the business. So I'm asking you questions about circumstances, which always come up, and it could be a made-up circumstance or an actual circumstance. So it's off of what they've told me. And I'll say, well, tell me what you did the next day. And if they're still holding on to this bad situation with a customer, a vendor, a channel partner, I'm realizing how much time they're going to spend outside of paying attention and giving intention to the desired outcomes that we have, which is behavior. And so understanding how much time they spend in non-negotiable behavior compared to where they spend their negotiable behavior, which the majority of the people spend most of their time interfering with an infinite amount of intelligence, intuition, energy, and inspiration. It's just that guys like D. Wade, they could handle more energy during the day than I could because of their age and their strength, cardio shape, et cetera. But they never get there because they're talking to their agent, their wives, their girlfriends. They're interfering with where we really want to be. This very intentful way of doing things. See, there's a mathematical equation to success. What you pay attention to and what you give your intention to will equal the coincidences in your life.
No doubt. Say it again.
What you pay attention to, so vision boards, for example, people will talk about, that doesn't do dick, right? Put your dream house on a goddamn board and then get high, sit on your mom's couch, broke all the time, dreaming about that house.
Now we're getting real. All
right? That's not going to happen. But when you put that house up there and you say, I want this house for the sake of financial security for my family, to create a dynasty legacy for my family, and I'm willing to do, say, think, feel, and believe. And when circumstances arise that aren't aligned with what I'm doing, saying, which happens every day, even in my life, I'm not going to try to go over it, under it, through it, around it, resist it, lie to it, cheat it, manipulate it, or deny it. I'm going to stop, breathe, drop to center, right? These are these words that I believe are faith-based words, regardless of your religion. Recollect, remind, and remember. When we are facing interference between an infinite source that we're born into, you need to stop and drop to remind yourself, remember yourself, and recollect yourself with the infinite. Now you can roll back into your divine direction. That divine direction can be corporate, it can be football, it can be personal. But too many people spend the majority of their life accelerating in the wrong direction or interfering with it at the very least.
Now I'm gonna add for these folks, I didn't know this. The guy was one of the most successful businessmen and lost it all.
Over $100 million.
To drugs, addiction.
It's in the book. So,
and then you reset and came back even stronger.
Yeah. If I could share that story real quickly, because humility is an interesting creature, because in my mind, when we talk about humility, I see Nick Saban as very humble, but yet extremely intentional. And for me, real quickly, I lost everything. The only reason I wanted to be rich is I had a single mom who raised six kids. All six of us, except for me, went to the Ivy Leagues. My siblings graduated summa cum laude from Harvard, Penn, Columbia. All put us all through school. And all I wanted to do was buy her a house. Here I am running the most notable sports agency in the world. They made the movie Jerry Maguire about The Firm and Lee. I had access to what billionaires. I had over $100 million. And I had to go tell my mom, not only was I bankrupt, but I lost her home because I didn't take my name off of her title when I bought the house. So I walk up to my mom, who's very religious, and I'm crying like a four-year-old, you know, you can't get anything out. And she's like, oh my goodness, what's the matter? Are you okay? Is your wife okay? Are the kids? I lost everything. Oh, thank God. She then says, oh, what can I do? I said, Mom, I lost your house. You need to move. Oh, do you need some money? Mom, I don't think you heard me. I lost your home. You need to move.
Wow.
I heard you, son. What can I do for you? I said, Mom, why is God punishing me? She looks at me and smirks. This is a woman that was just told that her son had lost everything, including her home. And she smirks at me and she goes, God does not punish anyone. He protects you. He promotes you. He loves you. And he's perfecting you. And you got to figure it out. This is your chance. Sorry.
Wow.
I said to her that, Mom, I don't believe in God. She smirked at me again. And she said, oh, son, you believe in God. You just believe in the wrong God. What can I do to help you?
Wow.
What can, the same thing that Belichick said, the same thing that you said, what can I do to help you? And so I started to seek not only wisdom in my life, which was finding people like Urban to teach me to get to where he was, people like Urban who would bring the best out of me, but I created faith in my life that allowed me to understand a very valuable business lesson. I learned it as a below average college football player, as a defensive back. When the evidence isn't indicative of where you want to be or better, or it's contrary to where you want to be or better, it's still protecting you and promoting you. You got to figure it out. It's pushing you to your better self, even though the evidence isn't. If somebody would have told me in 2008, when I lost everything, that I'd be sitting here with more money, helping more people and having more fun with people, legends, my people that I've looked up to and studied, who I've only heard extraordinary things about, I would have said, F you. Like, there's no way, right? I literally saw no vision of it until I incorporated faith. We create the resistance in our life. We create the interference in our life. And it's wisdom and faith that shorten the distance of resistance. So just quite simply, every day you're going to have problems. Have you ever gone a day with not one problem? Meaning there was certainty of everything in your day exactly as you wanted it to go. But here's the great thing about a problem. Inside every problem is the solution already. It's just a lapse of time. It's just a lapse of time before you come to what? A resolution, a resolution. That is it. So I use time to quantify. I'm looking for people that are aligned with my culture, but are not going to spend too much time outside of it. And so I'm asking for their stories and their lessons to figure out how much time did it take them to figure out the resolution to what will happen every day in business, problems, struggles.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.